You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition. Last Friday, I did some commentary on the fires, the wildfires in California, both in Northern California and in Southern California. And I indicated that the President of the United States was going to be flying out to California, and he did Saturday, and met with the governors, both the current governor, Jerry Brown, as well as the governor-elect, Gavin Newsom, and also the mayor of Paradise, and surveyed their destruction and its total because of the sheer heat. And what's interesting, I think they generally got along. I mean, but why? Well, usually when you have these disasters, the states ask for money from the federal government, and President Trump was very forthcoming with that. And he should be, because every state citizens pay federal taxes. And when you have a natural disaster, the federal government does provide some, not all of the aid, but does provide relief and aid to the state or location where the fires, in this case fire, it could be floods, hurricanes, whatever. So I think you need to understand that. So there was, on both parts, a desire to be cooperative. Now, there is a fundamental difference between the two. And one thing that I forgot to mention last time, in a number of these news reports, you have, for example, the governor of California, Jerry Brown, mentioning climate change. It always amazes me that no distinction is made between weather and climate change. Climate change takes decades, centuries. It's more influenced on the time scale is a geologic time scale, which spans hundreds of thousands of years. And no one, I won't say no one, but nearly no one disputes that the climate has been changing the entire history of this planet, even when man was not on the planet. But they always say we're climate deniers. I'm not a climate denier. What I do deny and challenge is there's just one cause for climate change, and that's man. The truth and the science is, no, they're not. There are many causes of climate change, and they take decades to work out. And man, frankly, is one, but a very low order or marginal cause of climate change. There are much more important that we have absolutely no control over, the sun being the most obvious one. So I really can't take seriously when people say, well, it's climate change that caused these wildfires. Not really. Not really. And I think President Trump is closer to the mark. It's managing these forests, whether it's by the U.S. Forest Service or the Department of, I forget the title of the department. I know California has a Department of, I want to say Forest Services, but I could be wrong. I know they have an agency, a state agency, that's responsible for the forests in California, and there are many forests in California, and many of them are burning. And one of the reasons is we have not permitted, or the state or the federal government has not permitted, a lot more logging. It's there, but if you just let them grow, grow, and grow, eventually Mother Nature takes its course and you have a fire. However it's caused, whether it's lightning or man-made, when you have these dense forests, if there ever is a fire, either caused by a campfire or nature or electrical wires, let's say, falling down and there's a spark, there's many, many things that could start this, and they're still investigating it. And then if you don't manage the forest properly, and this goes over many, many years, this does not just happen suddenly in 1 year. And you can just, if you ever see the footage of these forests, they're dense. They're densely packed forest, and underneath it, you have a lot of, smaller trees, but call it leaves. Best way to look at it, it's fuel for a fire. And when they break out, there are no boundaries. And if you have not, for example, cleared a significant area around building structures, whether it's a house or a business, if they're right near to the forest, they're going to burn. And they did. And about 90% of the town of Paradise was destroyed. Currently, it's estimated, the death count is 80, but it keeps going up, folks. Last week it was in the 60s, now it's in the 80s, over 1,000 people are missing. And here's what you got to keep in mind, there is some rain and the weather changes, and if we have rain, you're going to have mudslides, and many of the remains will be washed away, and we will never know who died. That's why there's a rush right now to try to sift through the ashes of the town and houses to see if they can find the remains. Many people are missing and will never be found. They're dead, but we don't know where their bodies are. Now, some we do, but many, many more, over 1,000 are missing. Now, some of those is just people not being able to contact or connect. But over the next 1 or 2 weeks, there'll be some reduction of the missing. But then we'll see that this is not only the worst wildfire in California's history, but really in the United States. I'm assuming the death count will be in the hundreds. Now, we won't be able to confirm what it is because we simply cannot find the remains of the dead. I do hope that as fast as they can go through the ashes, what's left of businesses, homes, hospitals, churches, and find the remains. But if it rains and you start having mudslides, it's going to make it infinitely more difficult to find the remains if you ever do. They'll just simply be washed away, spread over a wider area, and once that happens, that person's body, it's like spreading ashes. There is no cemetery, there's no plot. Well, there can be, but the remains won't be in it. So again, my heart goes out to the people affected by this natural disaster. And I hope some, let's say, friendships can develop between President Trump and the new Governor Newsom and the old governor, or about to leave office in January, Jerry Brown. I thought in 2016 that Jerry Brown would run for president. Will he run in 2020? Well, it looks like there will be about 24 Democrats. So it's going to be a crowded field, but they need someone with a solid record, whether you agree with it or not. So it would not surprise me at all, even though Jerry Brown is getting up there, that Jerry Brown would be a contender. Remember, he has run for president before. He knows the difficulty of winning an election, even getting a nomination. And there are a lot of young people, especially from California, but in the Democratic Party, especially the left wing, that are going to be trying for the nomination in 2020. The 2020 race has already started. And I am of the opinion that Jerry Brown could be a contender, but I think Hillary Clinton will run. And there's a long, long, long list. So the question is, who will it be? And will Donald Trump defeat him? I think he will. Because if the economy continues to grow and prosper and boom, that's going to be difficult for any Democratic candidate to overcome. Because then Donald Trump has showed he can deliver on his promises. But he has his problems. And his biggest problem is, where's the wall? And where is the removal and deportation of millions of the illegal aliens that are here? That was one of the two big problems. Promises that attracted a lot of people to his campaign, and that's why he became president. And he has to deliver on that. Otherwise, I think he will be a one-term president. Will he be challenged? Maybe by two or three Republicans. So Donald Trump has a number of challenges facing him, and I don't think it's in any way guaranteed that he'll have a second term unless he can overcome them. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I didn't vote for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, and mainly because these are two big government parties. While they do have their differences on certain issues, the fundamental problem of both parties is government spending is out of control. Government is simply too big. It needs to be downsized, radically downsized. And there's no leadership in either party that wants to do that. Far from it. They want to do the opposite. So until you have a new political party that truly is for a limited government. We have under a constitution that's designed or was designed to limit government. You're fundamentally going to have the status quo. You're not going to have any change and you're not going to have any hope. And the problem with that is we're running out of time to do some fundamental changes that need to be done, because otherwise you're going to see major cuts in entitlement programs, that's Social Security, Medicare, as well as welfare programs. And together with major cuts, you're going to have major tax increases, and both of those will be not well received. We need fundamental tax reform and cuts of taxes, but together with that, we need fundamental cuts of federal government spending, and the leadership is simply not there. The biggest deficit in Washington is leadership of both political parties. They're not up to the job. They won't tell you the truth. They'll lie about it, what's happening. They're great at finger-pointing, but in terms of doing what needs to be done to save the United States, they're not doing it. They're making it worse and worse every day. And now I think a lot of what the Democrats have been doing in Florida and Georgia, and very much so in California, is trying to steal votes, voter fraud. And I don't have time this show, but I do want to get on what happened in California, where what's interesting, Orange County has traditionally been a Republican conservative stronghold, and the governor on the Republican Party won by over 200,000 votes. And on Election Day, several of the congressmen, Republicans, won, but suddenly now they're losing. How could that have happened? Well, it's called voter fraud, and one of the techniques is they send out multiple ballots, and they count provisional ballots that shouldn't be counted. I would not have provisional ballots. And quite frankly, I think there should be an investigation, especially into Orange County in California and Broward County in Florida, and what went on in Georgia, because there's obvious to me that, unfortunately, we have a political party that believes in the ends justify the means, and they will do anything, including stealing an election by fair means or foul. And that needs to stop, because that fundamentally undermines the confidence of the American people in the electoral process. And I'm afraid it's going on, especially with this voter registration. You know, I listened to someone calling a radio show, and she was from California, a Republican, I believe Orange County, elderly, and said, I asked for a ballot. She emailed them so she could vote and got six. How do you get six ballots? I about fell out of my chair. Now, that's anecdotal information, but if it's widespread, if you're wondering why suddenly relatively safe seats in Orange County suddenly went Democrat, liberal Democrat, you don't have to look very far. So this needs to be investigated. And if it's happened, they need to make fundamental changes. And remember, as far as I'm concerned, California today is a single-party state. Now, yes, they do have Republicans, but it's controlled by the Democratic Party. And if the Democratic Party is going to make this part of their way to assume power, then I think the federal government has a role to play to make sure that elections are not stolen by either political party. Remember, I won't vote for either of them. They're big government parties. The politicians of each party are bought and paid for. Sometimes whoever is buying them buys both Democrats and Republicans to make sure that laws are passed don't negatively affect them, if anything, benefit them. So this needs to be looked at, and I will sometime in the future do that, because I don't want the corruption of the electoral process. That would more or less make the United States very much like the phrase is a banana republic. What it would make it is fundamentally corrupt. And once the American people see that, the proper response is not to vote for Democrats or Republicans, but support another party, a reform party that will fundamentally clean it up, balance the budget, and cut the size of the federal government. That's what's needed. The challenge is you're going to have to do battle with two political parties that, for all practical purposes, have run this country for over 150 years. It's going to be a very much uphill battle, and it's going to require the American people to stand up a new political party that will challenge Democrats and Republicans across this nation. Now, I reported last week that the Honduran caravan of illegal aliens, this is the invasion of Mexico by Hondurans, had arrived in Mexico. And there were Mexicans protesting their arrival. Now, Mexico is, it's not the poorest country in the world. That's point one. But they're not the most prosperous country either. So when you have poor from, or worse off, coming from other nations, they directly compete with Mexican laborers. So it doesn't surprise me that Mexicans are protesting. It's not everybody in Mexico, but they understand what's going on, and they don't want them to stop in Mexico. And what's happening is the president has ordered the military to make sure they don't get in the country. And what they're doing is stringing barbed wire, cortina wire, on the fences. They do not want these caravan members. Most of them are male, by the way. They're young males. Yes, there's some children and women, but the overwhelming majority are males. The United States government has identified about 500 of them as having criminal records. That doesn't surprise me. You're talking, the estimated total number, if you add up all the caravans, is over 6,000. So having less than 10% being felons, that's about right. Maybe a little high, but still, we don't want them in the country. But there's a way to claim asylum, and you need to go to the U.S. Embassy in the country you're at, and keep in mind the first country after you leave the country because you believe you're persecuted, that's Mexico. And the government of Mexico offered them asylum. They didn't. Some took it, others did not. But that's the law. And the American people, why they welcome legal immigrants, do not welcome what I call the illegal alien invasion of the United States over the last 30 years. And those numbers add up to somewhere between 30 million and 60 million. And those are the ones that Trump promised to remove and deport to their country of origin, as well as build the wall. Well, there's less than 100 miles of new wall, and I think that's way high. I think they're less than 50 miles of new wall. And the reason is not hard to understand. Congress, when the Republicans controlled Congress, both the House and the Senate, it appropriated some money, but the money was primarily to make repairs to existing barriers, primarily fences. And we have those in California and other parts of the United States, some in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. So Trump is going to have, in my mind, he's going to have to fight for a second term. I think he'll pull it off, because if the economy is truly doing very well, in other words, is booming, and the unemployment rate, for example, could get under 3%, and if together with that, the labor participation rate goes from roughly 63% back up to 64 or 65, he's going to be very difficult to defeat. And I'm not trying to defeat him. I'm just saying people will vote their pocketbooks, especially if they see that the results that Donald Trump promised when he was running the first time, he delivered on. Not everything, but number one or number two issue always is the economy or jobs or some combination of the two. And that's why it's very, very important that the U.S. economy not go into a recession in 2019 nor 2020, although some people are predicting it will. Now, here's why it could happen. they did not do enough of a tax cut. And President Trump and people in Congress were saying, well, we'll do it again next year. Well, not anymore, because now the Democrats control the House and bills, money bills, including tax bills, have to originate in Congress. So we'll wait and see what happens. I don't think the Democratic Party will do anything in any way that can fundamentally help Donald Trump, and that includes a tax cut. Tax cut and tax reform, I think, are out of the question. They don't want to give Trump the credit, and it's needed. So we'll see how much of a stimulus the tax cut that was passed and how long it will last. There's always lags before a policy's full impact is felt. And on taxes, it should be for at least a couple of years, but we'll see. But there's not going to be any real fundamental desire by the Democrats, or for that matter, most Republicans, except those that are financially or fiscally responsible. They're going to just spend more money, and the deficits are going to balloon. And you have enough big spending Democrats and Republicans, they can more or less pass what they want. And that's the game. That's why I'm not a Democrat or a Republican anymore. That's the little dirty secret game that they do. The big spending Democrats get together with the big spending Republicans, and they fashion a budget, both appropriations and the authorizations. And we're going to see this fiscal year, $1,000 billion, and another $1,000 billion the following year. And if that happens, I think we're going to see another bubble and another burst of a bubble. A lot of speculation. And we're hearing sounds that real estate is soft and getting softer as interest rates climb. I'm looking at the clock. I want to quickly go over the fact that the White House did announce new rules for the press. And to sum it up, if you're recognized, and that's important, if the president or his press secretary or some government official recognizes you when there's a press availability or a press conference, you get to ask one question. That's the rule. You can only ask one question, not two, three, four, or five. Now, immediately, the question is, what about follow-ups? If the speaker, let's say it's the president of the United States, entertains the follow-up, that's all right. So they're going to play it somewhat by ear, because the president could answer a question, and then what the reporter will do, president, I have a quick follow-up, blah, 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 and then the president has the option either to answer it or go to another person. And if you fundamentally violate this rule, like Jim Acosta does, and there are others, that's grounds for revoking your press credentials and pass into the White House. Remember, it's a privilege. And when you have many people competing to be in that room, they can be selective. And if you don't watch out, if you're not courteous, and that's fundamentally what it is, you need to be courteous. Professional is the word I would use. So Jim Acosta is back in the White House, but I don't think he's going to be there very long, because the president can shut him down real quick by not calling him. And we'll see whether the president calls him. I wouldn't call the guy. I wouldn't. That's how I would deal with him. And if he breaks the rules or tries to break the rules, and I think he would, the president has said, either I or whoever is speaking for me should walk out. We will walk out. That's what they should have been doing. It's long past due, because unfortunately you have a number of reporters that are trying to dominate the conversation, monopolize it, and they shouldn't be allowed to, because they're really taking the time of other reporters. I'm all for the press asking challenging questions, difficult questions, and they have really a limited time to do that. Now, sometimes you can do it not when the cameras are on, but ask the question and they can get back to you. But as far as I'm concerned, this is way overdue, and I'm really glad the judge specified that they need to set forth, you know, the procedures, the rules, the regulations, and that the president is taking it seriously. And just keep in mind, the president does not have to give a press conference. Now, it's not in his interest to do that, but he can, and past presidents have, and he could just freeze them out. Or take it where you have brief opportunities, like the president is going to Camp David, is going to go on the helicopter, or he's going on a trip and is willing to answer a few questions as he's headed for the helicopter or he stops. Now, he's always done that. But President Trump sort of goes hot and cold. There have been times when he wants to answer a lot of questions. and will take the time. There are other times where he's not answering any questions. And presidents can do that, and they control the situation. I think Donald Trump knows that, because I think he's a master manipulator of media, what I call big lie media. It is big lie media. It's very much biased. It's mostly progressive liberal. They support the Democratic Party agenda and its candidates, and they really despise or hate Donald Trump. And Donald Trump plays them like a violin and makes chumps out of them, and they fall for the bait all the time. So we're going to see some interesting future, not only press conferences, but remember, Daley, the Trump's press secretary, is, now most people don't watch him, but occasionally there's some news, even in the scheduled, it's in the White House, it's a rather small, cramped room, where reporters, both from television and print, ask questions of the press secretary. That's been in almost all administrations. And sometimes it's friendly and sometimes it's hostile. Unfortunately, in this administration, it's very hostile. And it's clear that President Trump has told Sarah Sanders, if you think they're out of line, shut it down. Not only can the president shut down questioning, so could the press secretary. Now, that will not help the media that needs stories. So we're going to see the relationship either get better, or we're not going to see many future press conferences. Now, one other thing that I want to, there are a couple more stories, but the one that I have not touched upon, but it is the first story, is tensions are mounting between communist China and the United States regarding trade. I think it's clear that Trump wants to see any promises that the Chinese make kept. Talk is cheap. He wants to see action, and he's making a point that I agree with. I'm not a protectionist. I'm a free trader. But I recognize, as did Donald Trump when he was a citizen, that China took advantage of the United States. They're stealing our intellectual property. And what Donald Trump is trying to do is change the entire situation. And first, you just have to get their attention. And one way he's getting their attention is slapping tariffs on billions, hundreds of billions of Chinese goods. And unfortunately, the Chinese really didn't think it through. They don't know how to handle Trump. I think what they're hoping is in another 2 years, they'll just try to wait him out, that a Democrat would win. And the Democrats, as well as past Republicans, they just weren't tough on China, and China took advantage of them, and you needed a president that stood up to them, and Donald Trump has. I think we're at the two-year point. I hope for some progress. I hope for an agreement, but I'm afraid if we don't quickly get one, that's in the interest of not only the United States but China, we're not going to get one in the next 2 years, because the Chinese communists have helped the Democratic Party in the past, and they're doing it again. We'll learn more about that. So if that's what they're betting on, they're not going to agree to anything. They'll talk a lot and complain about a lot, but no deal will be cut, which means Donald Trump has to get reelected before the communist Chinese will seriously negotiate. And at that point, they've miscalculated. And I'm afraid that's exactly what's going to happen. Now, there's still some time for the communist Chinese. They won't admit that what they did was wrong. It was wrong. They unfairly took advantage of not only the United States, but the European countries. And they have been and are continuing to steal our property or intellectual property. What should happen, I think will happen if Trump is reelected, is many companies will go to other countries. See, I made the point and other people made the point, but it wasn't the best point to make, that the American people would have to pay most of those tariffs. Not necessarily. It depends on, and I'm not going to get into the economics. It's hard to explain. It's a concept called elasticity, price elasticity. What happens when you change the price? In an elastic good, if you lower the price, you sell more. Now, many of these goods that are coming in the United States, they don't want to lose the sale. So if there's a 25% tariff, and most of them are 25%, what they'll do is cut the price upwards of 25%. So the burden is largely on the Chinese communist company. And remember, many of these companies are, for all practical purposes, government run. they're willing to take the cut. Otherwise, Americans won't buy it. If it's 25% more and there's competition, and there is competition, Americans will buy the cheaper good all the time. So what the communist Chinese will say, okay, I'll cut my price 25% to offset the tariff, or at least most of it. And that apparently is happening. So you can see that it's very much in the advantage of both nations to come to an agreement. But we're not seeing any signed, sealed, delivered deal that's satisfactory to the Trump administration. And I don't think you will. And that means United States consumers will have to seek out alternative sources for their goods. All of this takes time. Initially, I can see where the communist Chinese, their exporters, are going to, where they can, you can't always do this, cut their prices. And they might even be selling at a loss. The Chinese price, and people familiar with that, usually was the lower price. That's why they won and took over many markets for various goods in not only the United States, but other countries. So the Chinese price can dramatically be cut to offset the tariffs. So even when a tariff, you got to pay the tariff, who's really paying the tariff? It's the communist Chinese, the exporters. Now, the question is, how long can they do it? As long as they're making a profit, they can continue doing it. But if they're not making a profit, they can't do it very long. So I think tensions will mount, and I don't have time to get into it, but it's very much linked to the United States negotiations with North Korea, because the only reason North Korea has those nuclear weapons and missiles is the technology transfers and resource transfers, the knowledge, the technology that the communist Chinese gave to North Korea over the years. North Korea is a fundamentally not only a totalitarian regime, but one of the poorest in the world. Yet they have missiles that can reach the United States together with nuclear weapons. Now, they have to still test them and perfect them, but they wouldn't be in the position they are without the communist Chinese. So I believe the Korean Peninsula should be free of nuclear weapons, and the only way that's going to happen is if the communist Chinese tell, in no uncertain terms, that North Korea has to stop its research, its development, its production of not only nuclear weapons, but also long-range missiles. And what I'm saying is the United States, really, barring war, the leverage is all with the communist Chinese, and I think that's directly related to trade. So if there's no real progress in the trade area and no pressures brought to bear on North Korea, I can see the United States, the Trump administration, putting on a total embargo of all communist goods, both coming into our country and going out. And I think we're fast approaching the date that this needs to happen, and that's 1 January of next year. Now, they're not telling you that in public. You give them enough time, because this type of situation took years to develop, and it's not going to change overnight. But at some point, President Trump's patience is going to run out, especially if he sees no progress either in getting a trade agreement with China, one that's not only free but fair, and we don't see any progress in North Korea. So both of those could suddenly stop. You need two parties to negotiate, and if on the other side they're not negotiating in good faith, then you don't meet with them. There's no point with meeting with them. And I'm afraid we're fast approaching that day. Really, it's North Korea and communist China that have the most to lose. And I think President Trump knows that. And why he does want a mutually acceptable trade deal, he's no longer going to be like both past Republican and Democratic administrations that simply gave it away. And why did they give away the jobs of Americans as American plants went to many other countries? And I think the American worker is beginning to see this, connecting the dots, but you need media to connect the dots here. You can't just look at North Korean nuclear missile development program and not looking equally at what the communist Chinese provided them and what the communist Chinese got when they got access to American markets. And yes, both sides win. American consumers won by much cheaper prices. What's the price of a pair of sneakers? $10 to $20? Where it becomes a consumable where you wear them out, you throw them away. Now, yeah, you can always spend a lot of money for the brand names, but if you go to the big box retail stores like Walmart, many of those goods are now from China, but could in the future be from other countries. This is going to be very interesting. There will be further updates. Apparently, there won't be any meetings between the U.S. and the Communist Chinese until President Trump and the President of China meet in an upcoming summit. And maybe there'll be some progress there. If there isn't, I'm not optimistic. I will have one more show Tuesday before the Thanksgiving vacation. It probably won't be a long show, probably shorter than this one. And the only reason this one is as long as it is, the person that should have been coming after me has not come in. So I had more time, and I hope I used it wisely. I think we all need to be thankful, count our blessings, and I hope you all have a outstanding Thanksgiving dinner with your friends, your family, in case you don't have time to listen to Tuesday's show. Really, Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday are the big travel days. I'm going to be staying in Dallas, but I'm still not going to be able to give a show on Wednesday. So have a happy Thanksgiving, enjoy your turkey, and I'll be back the following Monday. With that, let me play my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.